Hi everyone, welcome to the Hero Podcast. My name is Mauricio Porras and I am the founder of Hero. Hero is an activism company creating the tools and technology people need to accelerate social and environmental change. Make sure to join the waiting list to gain early access to our products and platforms at heroactivism.com. In this episode, our guest is mental health advocate Olivia Miller from Ontario, Canada. We talked about her personal journey, about how she started Bridges of Hope, a safe space to start conversations around the topic of mental health in different communities. She shared some advice on how to deal with the negative effects of social media, about the importance of finding time apart from activism to take care of our well-being, and key insights about how connecting around empathy can help us to drive change. So give it a listen, and I hope you enjoy it. Olivia Miller, thank you so much for joining the Hero Podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm really excited to learn more about your story and what you're advocating for. So maybe for those who are just meeting you through this podcast, can you maybe describe a little bit about the work that you're doing and who you are?
Absolutely. So I'm a mental health advocate from Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, and I'm also a university student at the University of Waterloo. I'm studying social development studies and peace and conflict studies with a minor in political science, and I'm very passionate about starting open conversations about mental health as a collective within our society, talking about the structures that make it difficult to have these conversations and kind of breaking down barriers that people have that hold them back from being able to express all of their feelings in the wide spectrum of emotions that we go through.
I'm glad that you brought the topic of mental health, because I think that it is definitely one of the most important topics of our time, right? There's so many struggles, especially during this pandemic. We've been facing a lot of things during this time. So I'm just curious, how did you start advocating for mental health, and how did you start your path as an activist?
Yeah, I have struggled with mental illness for a very long time. I think I started counseling when I was in grade six, maybe, and I've always had OCD, anxiety, and depressive tendencies. And so only recently was I more diagnosed with that. But very young, I realized that I was a different thinker. I was a sensitive individual who would take on the weight of other people's emotions. The issues going on around me in the world were a big deal to me. I always felt that they were my responsibility, and I felt the emotions of what other people were going through very often. And so with this realization came a lot of challenges growing up with my peers, with my teachers, with my studies, with my family, everything. It just weighed very heavily on me. And for a long time, I resented that. I kind of tried to shut out all of the emotions I was feeling and mm-hmm. felt out of control because of them. And throughout my young adulthood, now I've learned to kind of embrace that and find that activism is a way that I can channel that into a more positive way. So about in the high school era is when my mental health really took a crash, and I was struggling to build friendships with people around me. I was struggling to go to my in-person classes. I was having a lot of physical anxiety symptoms, just sore stomach, mm-hmm. very nervous, and it made it very challenging to be in the building. And there were big issues with friendships that I had, relationships that I had, that also increased my anxiety. And it was very unfortunate that the environment I was in for high school was not very open to discussions about mental health, racism, sexism, homophobia, all of the harmful mindsets and structures within our high school that were hurting people like me. And I think that what really tipped it off for me was noticing that I wasn't alone, but that no one was talking about it. I would look around in the hallway and people would have their headphones in, they'd be looking down, they'd be disconnected from everyone else around them. And that was just an accepted common thing. And it was one thing for me to feel like that, but then looking around and seeing so many other people hurting, I realized that I wasn't alone and that this needed to be improved. So one day a friend sent me this article about a teen from Sunderland, UK, who put positive messages up on a local bridge in her community. And these positive messages were so inspiring to people that they ended up preventing over a dozen deaths by suicide, which is huge. I mean, that little action made such a big difference. And it started to give me and this friend some hope that maybe this was an idea that we could bring to our community to make a similar impact and start bringing these conversations about mental health to the forefront of our high school and our broader community. So that is kind of the idea that we built off of. We created an initiative called Bridges of Hope, and we visited different bridges in our community with laminated positive messages. We would have speakers come out and share their stories. They would be leaders, educators, political figures in our community, and we would have wellness markets and interactive activities and lots of different ways that people could start really looking at their own mental health and looking around them to realize that even though this was going to be a difficult journey for themselves, they weren't alone in the ways that they may have felt before. And as much as this was such a great project for our community and we received great feedback, I didn't realize how much it was going to impact me personally, because at the time, as I mentioned, I was definitely struggling. So to start something like this and give myself a community where other people were being honest about their mental health and their struggles and being vulnerable as their way of living, it was really inspiring to me, and it picked me up in a time when I needed it. And ever since, I've been able to put a positive spin on my sensitivity and my empathy, and just be able to find the good in living that way and how it can benefit myself and others.
Yeah, I love that project and that initiative, because I think that it starts normalizing the fact that we can have these conversations, right? And it's really important that we do, especially in our communities. And as you said, the way sometimes people deal with emotions is by isolating themselves, right? And we need to start normalizing that it's okay to feel all of these emotions and have these feelings, and that we can have safe spaces to talk about them and not necessarily feel ashamed or, you know, leave those emotions and feelings inside of us, so, and seek for help. So I'm wondering about this project, Bridges of Hope. What was your biggest learning, or what did you see in the community change once you started doing this type of projects and raising awareness about mental health and talking more openly about this topic?
Yeah, I think what I was very surprised with is how ready people were to have this conversation. So many people were ready and waiting to talk about their mental health, but they didn't know where to go. And I think in so many ways, our society right now is also ready. We're ready to talk about all of the issues that have started appearing in our lives due to the pandemic. And that's something that we need to take action on. And so I think what was definitely the most surprising for me is just how ready people were to get on board. I prepared myself as someone who's very anxious for the worst. And I said, like, what if no one shows up? What if this is dead? Like, what? This could go really badly. And then I was surprised at just how similar we are. People who I never expected to connect with, I did connect with, and they were ready, they were willing, they were open. It's just so hard, I think, in our society to find the right avenues. Seeing a bad experience when you're vulnerable is huge. I mean, I have put myself out there and been vulnerable in spaces that weren't ready for it. And it can kind of leave you feeling kind of isolated and bitter and lost and feeling like maybe your approach to life isn't the best or it's going to end up getting you hurt. So, I mean, if anyone's had an experience like that, then they're more hesitant to open up and find those spaces where it's acceptable to be vulnerable. So, I mean, once we worked really, really hard at creating that open and brave space for people to be themselves, whatever emotion they were feeling at that time, we did receive feedback and we received people being present with us and believing in our message in a way that we didn't necessarily expect them to.
Well, that's great. And well, I'm glad to hear that you have that feeling that people are willing to talk more about this, because I think, as we said before, that's very important to get all those emotions and feelings out and especially seek for community and support. But also, I think we're in a time that, yes, we're talking more about this, but also we're living in a time where social media is playing a big role, right? Not only in a positive way, but also with its negative downsides, right? So how do you think, or what's the role of social media, and how can people, especially young people, need to take care of their mental health to understand that not everything that we are seeing on social media is real, or that it's actually what is expected from us, right? So what's some advice, or what have you learned during this process and conversations with people about how to use social media for good, and also how to deal and balance that so that it doesn't affect our mental health?
For sure. I think one of the things that I've tried is to limit my time on it. There are some really cool ways, especially with an iPhone, where you can limit how much time you spend on apps, and you can set it up so that it shuts down on you during certain parts of the day. And you can monitor it throughout your day to see how many hours you've spent on it. I definitely think no matter what content you're seeing on your social media, as a collective, we are just spending too much time on it. There's way too much weight on getting messages received back quicker. You just always have to be nearby your phone so that if someone does text you, you're ready, you're attentive, and you're willing to be a part of a conversation right away. There's just such a rush. And there was a rush before the pandemic in a broader sense in the way that we were living. But the rush with our phones, I think it's become even more dominant because the rest of the world has slowed down. Now our kind of our way of rushing is still attached to our phones. We're ready, we're waiting. And so I think just the first step to take before you look at kind of the content which you see on your device is to limit how much you're on it, the kind of exposure you have with it. And then after that, I mean, you can start looking at what you are seeing. I think there are lots of amazing advocates and influencers doing the work and working to educate us and shift our perspectives on really important issues in an accessible way that we haven't necessarily experienced before. And there's this kind of sense of radicalization happening in social medias that is really, really impactful and can be really beneficial, but kind of working with what content you feel comfortable with. I don't think it's worth ever straining your mental health or your comfort level just to connect with somebody online. I'm a big believer in that. And I don't think you owe anyone a reasoning for not feeling comfortable. I think we always only see the best pieces and the pieces that others want to show us. And it gets really hard to decipher that and to work with that when we're seeing so much content and it's moving so quickly. So I think the more protective we can be of what we're seeing, more protective of our energy and our time, the better off we'll be, because it's definitely a tool, but it can be overused and often is in our society.
I love that. And I couldn't agree more. And I think, yeah, we need to be, you know, very conscious about that and take care of exactly what you said, what we're looking at, the content we're consuming, and the time we also invest in these platforms, just to make mm-hmm. sure that, yeah, we're creating that balance, right? Between obviously using it for good and connecting with other people, but also realizing that we also need our time apart from these platforms and away from the phone to really connect in real life with other people and ourselves as well. Olivia, so you also work with the Activist Collab, right? A space to encourage honest and transparent conversations, not only about advocacy, but also about the challenges that come with that. I think the relation between activism and mental health is really close, right? I think that a lot of activists right now are struggling with this idealism and, you know, the fact that society expects that they need to be perfect, right? That they cannot make mistakes. And also there's a lot of pressure because of the little time there is really to create drastic change for our survival due to climate change. So there's a lot of climate anxiety, and there's a lot of frustration due to the lack of action from world leaders. So I think mm-hmm. activists are really struggling with this as well. And the fact that they're working tirelessly for hours and getting burned out. So from your experience working with activists and having this transparent and honest conversations about their work and some of the struggles, what's your take on mental health related to activism? What have you learned, and what are some advices that maybe you could give to activists that are struggling with this right now?
Absolutely. I think you touched on some really great pieces there with feeling the weight and the gravity of the situation we're facing with climate, with human rights, with needing the attention of world leaders in order to make really big changes, and how quickly that needs to happen because lives are on the line. I mean, this is mm-hmm. very serious. And as I've mentioned, I feel the weight of all of this on my shoulders, and it became clear to me very quickly that I was going to have to learn how to deal with feeling that weight and still making change at the same time. And it wasn't until the Activist Collab was created until I felt like other people are on that same experience. They're feeling the same things, the same urgency and heaviness. And I think definitely one of the most important things I've had to give myself permission to do is to just take a step back and acknowledge that it's going to take time to mm-hmm. understand all of these issues, because I think in that urgency and that rush, we forget the complexity of these issues and these situations, and we rush through them in a way if we're not carefully listening, we're not carefully understanding and empathizing in the way that these issues deserve. And I'm guilty of trying to wrap my head around something as quickly as possible so I can get to the solution part, so I can get to making a difference and planning a campaign and doing all the work, when I'm not really in a place where I'm ready to do the work. So mm-hmm. I think even a form of self-care while being a strong advocate at the same time is taking a step back and giving yourself permission to take longer to learn than maybe you're comfortable with, because you'd like to get to that place of doing the work.
Now, how do you, because what you're saying is so important, right? It's taking a step back and just taking some time for yourself and don't being like so hard on yourself. But how do you deal maybe, and I guess many activists out there could relate with the guilt that comes with not doing anything or taking a step back and feeling like you're leaving the fight? I mean, obviously you need to seek your well-being first in order to continue the fight, but what would you say to those activists that feel guilty when they take that step back and time for themselves and leave the fight, you know, on the side for a few days or weeks? What would you say, and how to deal with that guilt?
Yeah, I think for sure that is something that activists will struggle with just because of how important activism is to our identities. Like I said, it's kind of like a drive, it's a purpose, it's kind of our way of taking our unique empathetic mindsets and finding a way to pursue it that feels safe for us and feels motivational and purposeful. And so I definitely think that's something that people will experience a lot. I know I've been held to a certain standard in the past because I consider myself a mental health activist. So I've made decisions in the past that people have questioned because I'm a mental health activist. And there's something to be said with being respectful, but that being an activist is not the entire part of my identity. I am, I'm bisexual. I'm a woman. I'm a student. I'm a daughter. I'm a partner. I'm a friend. There are just so many pieces to who I am besides being an activist that I have to nurture and respect those pieces in order to show up as the best advocate I can be. And I think that's one of the parts that so many activists get stuck in, because their advocacy becomes such a dominant piece of who they are that they can't take that step back and nurture the other pieces. But I'm a big believer that everything happens when it's supposed to. And so in taking these steps back, we don't necessarily need to feel as guilty because we're nurturing who we are and the other pieces of who we are in order to step back into those activist shoes and say, okay, I'm ready. I am here as a whole. I feel refreshed and renewed again, and I can move forward. Because I definitely think activism is such a dominant part of our identities that it's important to take a step back and recognize that we are people beyond who we are when we're helping others.
I love that. And yes, totally. I think that so many activists may be struggling with this, but I think that there's so much more, you know, out of activism, right? And obviously, and I always say it, activism, I think it's one of the most important jobs and roles you can have in society of our time. But as you said, I mean, we need to, if we want to be all in and we want to give all the best we have, we also need to take care of ourselves, because, I mean, sometimes we put a lot of pressure on our individual efforts, but also we need to understand that while we're taking a step back, someone else maybe can cover for us. And it's at the end, it's a collective effort, and we need to redistribute the energies and the responsibilities and the different roles. And I think that if we understand that, then we can be at ease and make peace with the fact that we need to be okay first, and, you know, then we can get back in the game. So I'm also really curious about another project that you have called the Umbrella Project, but which, by the way, I love all the names of the projects you're working with. I think, yeah, I think they're very creative. So let's talk a little bit more about the Umbrella Project that you're currently involved with. It's about a classroom program and a parenting strategy to help children, you know, learn more about their social and emotional skills. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. I work for the Umbrella Project as a community ambassador, and the founder of the Umbrella Project is Dr. Jen Forrestal, and she's a naturopathic doctor from the Waterloo area. And in her practice, she was seeing a lot of children who were struggling to grasp kind of the concepts of growth mindset, of empathy, of gratitude and mindfulness, and all of these kind of big, broad terms that are hard to make tangible for kids. And she thought about how great it would be if we had some kind of easy analogy and some way of understanding these skills to teach kids and then bring to them in their environments. So being in schools, being with their families, how can we make these skills accessible and easy to understand? So that is what she's created through a school curriculum, where every month there's a new skill that students learn in their classrooms with their teachers. And then there's resources for parents to have at home to continue the learning. So I mentioned some of the skills, but there's also grit, cognitive flexibility, autonomy, mastery, purpose. So there's lots of really, really important skills that I believe are naturally taught in schools in some ways, but not necessarily at the forefront. And that's what this program does a really great job of doing. And we use the analogy of an umbrella to say that there's going to be rain in our lives no matter what. But with these umbrella skills, we can create a strong umbrella that helps us shield from the rain and helps us create a community that's strong enough to withstand it together. And in having that community approach, we not only build strong kids, but we build strong schools, and the message spreads beyond just what's happening at schools and at home. So we're just in Canada right now, but we just spread to the Philippines, which has been really exciting. And it's such an important program. I think we talk a lot about how mental health needs to change in our institutions, but there isn't really a lot of direction in that broad of a claim. We don't really know kind of how to move forward with that. And so Jen has done a really great job of creating these resources that are accessible to kids and make it easy to understand and grow as a community.
I love it. And one of the things that I'm noticing while we are speaking is that what your three projects or three main projects that you're involved and working with have in common, well, obviously mental health advocacy, right? But also there's a lot of sense of building community. And also I think that what these three platforms have in common, it's also empathy, right? I think that you're trying to also develop more empathy through the sense of community, through acknowledging our emotions. So let's talk a little bit about empathy and how can developing a, you know, this sense of empathy towards others can really help change and shift, you know, the things that we need to improve in our society.
Absolutely. I believe that when we do personal development work and we work on building our mental health to be better for us, we're just returning to the person that we've always been. I believe that a lot of our socialization harms us and ends up leading us to believe that we do have to be tough. We can't let in all of the emotions because depending on your gender, your race, your sexuality, only certain emotions are deemed acceptable for you. And I think in many ways, empathy is one of the ones that is hard to be acceptable of for yourself because it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable in a lot of ways to move beyond analyzing not only our own struggles and issues, but to look beyond ourselves and look at the struggles of other people, because that just seems so daunting. Like I have felt so overwhelmed by that in the past, and I think it can be extremely overwhelming. But I do believe that as more people start forming this empathetic mindset and this empathetic perspective towards the world around them, it becomes a safer thing to do because it's more common. And I think it just has that ripple effect as people start growing their empathy towards those around them. It becomes easier for everybody to do it, to make decisions rooted in empathy, to start reconciling all of the relationships that we've damaged and all of the generational harm that we've caused as, I'm speaking as a white woman. But I think that all of this has to start with individuals looking at themselves in a mirror and saying, I need to be more empathetic. I do believe that as we make that individual choice, we cause other people to recognize that they could do the same. And then we build a strong empathetic community through those numbers and through that growth. And it makes it less daunting and a little bit easier to make large decisions rooted in empathy.
Totally agree. And I think that empathy, well, it's one of the foundations of activism, and that acknowledging that the more empathy we try to practice and put ourselves in other people's shoes, and as you said, get out of our comfort zone and think about others and how we can also help other people. I think that that's the, you know, the foundation of building a more just world for all, right? Because I think that the more we look after each other, and also it will come back to us, right? We're going to have people looking after us as well. And we go back to the concept of community, right? In a community, everyone is looking after each other. And it's not such about individual actions, but collective efforts and everybody looking after each other in a safe space. So I think the more we can practice empathy and community building, I think that we can start changing, you know, in little circles or little communities, different, you know, levels of society, we can really start seeing change, significant change. And yeah, we live in a kinder world. Maybe we can start thinking about eliminating racism and discrimination and all this, you know, toxic practices that are in our society. So yeah, I think that the more we talk about empathy, the more we can build upon that. And I think that starts with the work that you're doing also about advocating for mental health and being more honest and transparent about the way we feel, you know, letting all that out and seeking out for help and building community. Olivia, maybe to start closing, I wanted to ask you, what does it mean for you to be a hero?
That's an interesting question. I think what I've learned through my advocacy is I will forever be impacted by helping other people. That will just always be a part of my narrative, and I'm never going to be perfect at it. I'm never going to have a clear blueprint on how to help people, but it's going to indirectly help me to help other people. And what I've had to come to see as a beautiful thing is that one of the biggest constants in who I am is that piece. It's that I would like to make change. I would like to help people on an individual level. I'd like to know people in their vulnerable states and help them be comfortable with that side of themselves. And as much as that's a very daunting and overwhelming piece of who I am, that is the biggest constant I've recognized for myself in who I am. And it's what I feel confident that I can always lean on and come back to and feel confident in is just my care for other people. So I wouldn't necessarily say that what being a hero means to me is being just so great at helping other people and knowing all the answers, but it's just that intention for caring about other people. It's that empathy that we've talked about. It's the constant desire and purpose from caring for other people and wanting to create a better world for those around us.
I love that. Olivia Miller, thank you so much for joining the Hero Podcast for this amazing conversation that I think that it's so important to have, especially in activism. We need to really take care of ourselves, of our well-being and our mental health. So thank you so much for raising your voice and helping so many people out there to connect with their emotions and their feelings and basically build a world around empathy and community. So thank you so much for sharing your story and for your amazing work. And of course, for being a guest in our Hero Podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of our Hero Podcast. Remember to subscribe and to follow us on Instagram and Twitter as Hero Activism. See you next time.